Hey there, this is Mira, your podcast host, Anka's AI avatar. Today on the Events Demystified, we're joined by Shenandoah Nicholson, a seasoned event planner and host of the Beyond the BEO podcast. This episode focuses on maximizing corporate events for business growth, where Shenandoah will share her expertise on leveraging events to boost organizational impact. From trivia to practical strategies, our guest brings her A-game, sharing how to craft events that genuinely connect and convert, so get ready to transform your event planning approach. And don't forget to subscribe on Spotify and YouTube for more expert advice. Let's get started.
Welcome to Events Demystified Podcast, where we explore and demystify the world of in-person, virtual, hybrid event AV production and technology by sharing insightful tips, tricks, and tactics to make your events a success. This podcast is brought to you by Tree Fan Events, a woman-owned boutique event production agency. And your host is Anka Trifan, a technical event planner and producer with almost two decades of hands-on technical experience in event production.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Events Demystified podcast. I'm your host, Anka Platon-Trifan, and today we are getting into something that all of us would probably want to know more about: how to use corporate events to get more leads and keep our customers, our clients, coming back for more. It's not just about throwing an event. It's about really making that event work hard for your business. We've got Shenandoah Nicholson with us to break this down step by step. She's been in the event industry for nearly 15 years, working across tech, HR, insurance, making sure events do exactly what they're supposed to do for businesses. Besides being super savvy about B2B event marketing, Shenandoah brings a wealth of personal interests and experiences that enrich her approach to event planning. So whether it's engaging in a battle of wits at pub trivia, and I've seen her in action on one of the cruises that we took a few months back, or maybe solving complex puzzles or sharing her wealth of knowledge with fellow event professionals through her own podcast, Beyond the BEO, Shenandoah embodies the multifaceted nature of today's event planner. But what does it take to truly make corporate events an important part of your marketing strategy? How do you ensure that each event is a step forward in building lasting relationships with your clients? And in a world where every dollar spent needs to translate into some type of tangible return ROI, how can event professionals navigate the pressure of delivering exceptional experiences while also providing that tangible? Today, we're going to answer those questions and some more, and perhaps sprinkle some trivia into our conversation and see what we get. So don't go anywhere, because we're going to get Shenandoah right here with us. Well, hello, hello. So awesome to have you on this side of the screen.
So good to be here. It's great to see you again, and I'm excited for our conversation.
I love it. We have some stories. We have actually shared a room.
Yeah.
Very proper. Happy to have been a room on a boat. Actually, there's more to that. We met during the Event Pros on the Go, which was a cruise for event professionals that two of our friends have organized beginning of the year. And to be honest, I didn't know you before, Shenandoah, and I didn't know what to expect. I'm like, you know what it is like when you're like, oh, I'm going to share this enclosed space.
Very small room.
No, right.
Cruise ships are not known for spacious rooms.
No, I'm like, how wild can this get?
Well, and I won't tease you too much that I just booked my next Virgin cruise because I loved it so much. My husband and
it
I
was
are going
amazing.
This fall, so.
Are you going alone or are you going
No,
alone?
My husband and I are going. He was so jealous of our trip and all the great food we had and all the good times we had. So I made good on the promise that I had said to him at the end of that.
You were so on the fence, like right then and there. I'm like, should I book my next one? Should I book my next one? And I was too, but you know, being on the West Coast, you're on the East Coast, at least it's easy because Virgin is serving the, you know, the East Coast, and I've got some crazy stories there. But on the West Coast, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to go all the way back, even though it was a wonderful experience. Maybe I should try some of the ones on the West Coast and make it like a family adventure. But anyway, that probably could be a conversation by itself. What I want to jump into before we get into the nitty-gritty of events and marketing, I would love to actually kick things off with a bit of fun. Like, you're the trivia queen. So how about you throw us a curveball? Do you have some kind of a quirky, little known fact about the world of maybe corporate events, maybe something to stump our listeners and get those gears turning?
I mean, I think that I would, you know, throw it out there. We're just coming out of GMID. And yesterday I saw so many posts about the economic impact of events. Mm-hmm. And I think the number I saw was $42 billion worth of GDP in North America. And I'm sure that stat is not exact, but that would be the trivia I would bring to anyone talking about events is, you know, what is the economic impact of those events?
I love that. Actually, I remember there was a post coming across my feed on LinkedIn on that vein. And it's someone that I know from Caesar, Serena. She was sharing. It was actually a beautiful visual of them putting this marketing on all the posters, big signs in Vegas about, you know, meetings matter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was interesting because she was sharing like how, you know, the meeting industry is not necessarily known to be such a large industry. And yet it is, to your point, to the, you know, to that point they just shared. And it was interesting to see some of her stats. I don't remember from the top of my head everything. Mm-hmm. Sure, I should go back probably. But it was very, very, it's very true to what you said. Like, it's a large industry. There's a lot of people that work in this industry, and sometimes we're the invisible ones.
Often. Yeah, often. Usually exactly. That's the good ones, right?
We're behind. Right, you want to be the invisible. And if something doesn't work out, that's when things start to like become visible. And they're like, yeah, I don't want to be in the spot.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Well, as we're going to dive into the strategies that I mentioned and the insights that you've mastered over the years, I would love to start from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind, would you share with our audience how you got started in the industry, what led you to where you are today, and what were maybe some of the pivotal moments that shaped your career?
Sure. So started in high school. I was on prom committee. And I loved it. I was the treasurer. So no surprise there that my trivia was about money, because I was in charge of the budget and I loved it. And for a little bit, I thought I wanted to get into weddings and, like, you know, the personal celebration types of events. And after finishing university, I did a working holiday abroad. I came back. I got a job as a receptionist. It was a contract job, you know, probably was supposed to be about a year. And in that role, I was supporting a sales team with a lot of their events and kind of figured out, oh, there's like this whole other side of events that people don't often know or aren't as obvious to someone who's not in the industry. And from there, just kind of kept asking for more of that type of work. Went back to school, got my event management certificate, went back to school again and got my marketing certificate because I realized the connection between the marketing and the event side, especially in the corporate world. And from there, it was just kind of moving through the industries. You know, it's one of those things I look back on and think, oh, I've been in tech for over 10 years, which was not, you know, what I set out to do. But sometimes those opportunities that seem like, oh, this is just a contract job, I don't know where this is going to take me, end up kind of being the stepping stones to that full career. So it started with like a little bit just in high school and then moving from there and just kind of taking on bigger and more complex events and really digging into how they were supporting the organization.
I love that story. If you were to go back really quick in time and tell your younger self a piece of advice, like give yourself a piece of advice, and this is in light of a lot of young professionals coming into the industry, what would you tell yourself?
I think, I mean, one, that it is a career, right? That it's not just an afterthought, and it can sometimes feel like that in some organizations if they're not really clear on what their event strategy is, but that it is a viable career. And that, you know, I would have probably gotten started even sooner in kind of that education piece and networking within the industry. I think I just saw a post yesterday on LinkedIn about, you know, new grads or new high school grads not really sure what they're wanting to do and kind of doing two and three different types of post-secondary because they're figuring it out. And I think that my advice to like new grads or people kind of just starting out in their careers would be, if you see something that you think you're interested in, you know, reach out to someone who's doing it and ask them, you know, what does a day in your life really look like? And, you know, I often joke that everyone thinks that event planning is just the parties and really it's mostly spreadsheets, which is fine for me. But like, if you think that you're just going to be attending glamorous events all the time, that's a wake up call. So I think, you know, talking to people about what their day looks like and, mm-hmm. and knowing, you know, if you're looking, there are people in senior roles, in event roles at large organizations, and it can be done.
I love that. It's funny because I was onboarding someone to be my support on site and, you know, help with things and on the production side and on the planning side. And when I got her on site, she saw what was going on. Like the day after, she came to me and she was like, this is way too much work. Not what I had in mind. And I'm like, I'm baffled because I'm like, what do you mean? Right? Because in my mind, I'm like, we do this every day.
Yeah.
We do the 25,000 steps a day, especially when it's an event day. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't even think once how this could be different from, I don't know, like a regular job, I suppose. I don't know, because I don't remember having a regular job since I was in radio, per se, in high school, right? So I'm like, what did she have in mind? So it kind of like left me a little bit like, wow, I guess I didn't give her a good visual or like mm-hmm. description what this life really is. And I like your advice to just, you know, if you're not sure, like ask someone that is doing that, because you mm-hmm. might be getting yourself into a place, a situation that you can't easily, you know, remove yourself from.
Yeah.
There's way too many, you know, whatever attachment that or responsibility that might come with that. And if you don't love it, it's not a good place to be stuck in.
Yeah.
But I love that you had such a nice journey, and that really highlights, you know, the passion, the dedication that you bring to the event planning scene. And it is fascinating to see how sometimes some unrelated experiences that you have here and there and do this and that really equips you with this wide range of skills that really helps create better events, more engaging events, more ROI friendly events, right?
Yeah.
So now that we're kind of at the point where we can maybe dive into that deliverably real value of what events could bring with that foundation in mind, I would love to hear, when it comes down to the brass task of event planning, especially in the corporate world, how do you ensure that your events are not just enjoyable, right? They're not just great experiences, but also they contribute significantly to the ROI. And what's your approach to balancing the fun elements of an event with the financial goals? Because at the end of the day, you know, an event should also produce something.
Sure. So I think that I feel like I get hoarse talking about it so much on having a proper purpose and having a clear purpose. Like, why are we doing this? Why are we spending tens, hundreds? And to me, every aspect of the event should be supporting that purpose. So when we're looking at saying, oh, we want to do a welcome reception, or we want to have an expo, or we want to have breakouts. Okay. We want to do those. Why? Why does that support the event? And, you know, knowing what is it that we're trying to get out of this event is so important, because it's going to help you guide your decisions along the way in what you're spending your money on, spending your resources on, and the structure of your event. But then it's also going to ensure that it's following through to the other side of, okay, we wanted to do any one of those elements because we thought it would push the goal or help us reach this event goal and purpose that we had. And did we reach that? And so I think, you know, when I'm presenting to stakeholders internally, I often start the meeting with, this is the event, and this is why we're hosting the event. And this is what we've all agreed on. And I repeat it before the event, after the event, because, and it's part of my postmortem of starting with, why did we do this, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's easy, I think, when you're on site and the, you know, the vibes are good, people seem happy, they're having a good time, you know, the energy is good. That's great. But did that really translate afterwards? Like when you kind of come home and had the debrief and the sleeping until noon, and you know, you've had a chance to kind of step back from it. Did it still align with everything that you were doing?
Yeah, when you draw the line, did it make sense? You know, what you, and somewhat of a positive, or it's always a negative, and then you're gonna have to justify going back to your stakeholders, like, okay, well, that wasn't really such a successful, you know, event as we anticipated because of this and this and this. But then if you go back to your why and you, again, aligning that purpose with the numbers, I think that's where successful events can really happen. It's in that happy place. Now, before we jump into the next question, guess what? I got a quick trivia break.
I'm so excited.
You think you're trivia?
I mean, I feel a lot of pressure because you call me the trivia queen, but I'm very excited.
Well, for the record, you are competing with ChatGPT right now. So. So did you know that the first known corporate event was held way back in the 1750s, and it was this banquet for the governors of the Foundling Hospital in London. How is that for setting a trend? Foundling Hospital in London.
that's great. That's so funny. That also reminds me, I was recently in LA, and I learned that the Oscars started as just an award ceremony for an association. So it's the Academy Association. They had a dinner. They honored some people in a hotel room. The hotel is still across the street from where they host it today. But it started as an association dinner, which I think is just so adorable. And now it's like multi-million dollar, biggest night in Hollywood. It started in a ballroom. Not even a very big ballroom. It was pretty small. We snuck over and like looked in.
Yeah, I think I know which one. It was when I was back in LA and was doing events, all type of events down there. We had some kind of a event. I think it was some activation, and some of those, you know, hotels, like you said, like this one, for example, they're so old. It's like when you go in the back of the house, and especially you have to move equipment or things or, you know, stuff from the loading dock to the ballroom, you have to go through this like catacombs, like tiny tunnels under LA to get to where you need. And those elevators are so tiny that literally like you could fit two people in, but then try to fit like a case of anything, right? And you're like, I think if I put this in this tiny elevator, it's not going to come out. So we have to decide, what are we going to do here? Like totally not done and made for today's infrastructure, what an event really takes. Yeah, it was actually interesting to navigate some of those tunnels down there. But anyway, from history to modern strategy, how do you give, if you have any examples, how can you exemplify some ways in which you've been able to pull off on different budget that idea of surprise and delight in events?
Yeah, I think that surprise and delight is really, and that's a term I coined from or borrowed from my previous boss. And it's something that if you use just unexpected moments, and they don't always need to be expensive, they can just be, you know, an activation that is unusual or a setup that's unusual. You know, how can we rethink, you know, the banquet seating? Like, do we do something that's a little different that brings a little bit more drama? You know, with our user conference last year, we used Foam Core logo suspended with lighting, and like the impact that it had when people walked in the room was like incredible, because they were not expecting it. They couldn't figure out what it was made out of. And it was, you know, within budget. It was part of the AV budget, but it also could be reused. We used it throughout the event to create interest, to project things on. And then sometimes it's the little, you know, maybe it's a piece of swag. Maybe it's a piece of swag later in the event that, you know, maybe it's a multi-day conference and you're starting with, you know, a new piece of swag that day. You know, they think they've already gotten everything and there's something else. And sometimes it's on the individual level too, right? So, you know, I always keep a few extra pieces at the reg desk, and someone might say, oh, can I get another backpack for my kid? Or can I get this? And it's, you know, those little moments that they're going to remember of, oh, you know, just for you, you know, of course, everything is just for you and everything is very special. And so I think it's about reimagining, like, where are you putting in those elements and how can you spread it out throughout the event? How can you, like I said, how can you set ups to just make people think, what kind of entertainment can you bring in that is unexpected? I know that we're constantly trying to up ourselves every year. I know at the end of last year's event, everyone was like, well, how are you going to beat that next year? And I'm like, already? Can I just enjoy this event?
Right.
But I think it's, you know, taking those trends from other events that you're going to, or, and knowing your audience too. You know, are the industry I'm in now, is the demographic is very different from the industry that I was serving before, even though it's all tech, like our target audience is very different. And so what is it that gets them excited, right? It's not going to be the same thing that might get another group excited, right? So if you're an independent planner working with corporations, like really understanding their target audiences and what kind of gets them fired up is really important.
I love that. I also remember, I think it was last year, we were doing an annual meeting, and you know how your annual meeting is always set up sort of like the same way. And we tried to, I was working with a client that was willing to try something different, which is always like my kind of favorite clients, because that's where you can start like putting a little bit of creativity and thinking into, okay, how about we do something that we haven't done before? So one of those ways was, it was a regular ballroom setup, but instead of just using your either like rounds or like schoolies, you know, and chairs, we brought in a diverse seating so mm-hmm. that we had a multitude of options, so that if somebody just wanted to have their laptop and sit in the regular chair and just work, you know, while the annual meeting was going, they could have done that because we had that set up that way. But then if somebody just wanted to be sitting in a nice sofa, on a sofa, on a couch or something like that, we had a multitude of those as well, and different chairs and smaller groups and a little bit bigger, because like if you're in a group, you want to be close to the people that you know. If you're just mm-hmm. kind of like, oh, I'd rather be by myself because I'm a bit of an introvert and this is where like it's my me time, right? You can do that as well. And it was fantastic, the reaction that we got from everyone as they're walking into the ballroom. It, like, you'd be thinking that things are, you know, hang from the ceiling and there's things flying left and right. They're just like totally taken aback by just the fact that there was a different type of seating available.
Yeah.
And especially when you're dealing with, these days more than often, I feel like, neuro people with textured and all kinds of sensitivities and things, like you want to be able to provide something that is outside of the norm. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take a lot. Like if you think about it, like, I mean, yes, it meant renting some furniture, but like there's a lot of hotels that actually would have their furniture available if you pay a fee, and it wasn't a large fee, to use some of their already existing furniture that they have mm-hmm. in the hallway or here and there. You could use that in your ballroom and rent that for the day, and they would have no problem with moving it there. So opportunities are there as long as you know about it, or at least you ask or inquire. And even if you get a no, you know, at least you know, right? So yeah, that was something that came to mind as you were going through like this beautiful, you know, setting. You're going to have to figure out how you're going to up for next year.
Yeah. It's always the number one question. It's like, can't you just enjoy the event we just finished? Like literally 30 seconds ago, like we're still tearing down.
I'm like, okay, give me a break. Like, come on. Yeah. Well, here's another piece of little trivia. The concept of, as you know, mentioned, of surprise and delight in marketing. Guess what? It can be traced all the way back to the 1950s. And yet it's still a hit. Isn't that crazy?
Because people remember, and I know it's often a misquoted quote, but you know, people remember how you make them feel, right? And so when they get something that they're not expecting, or they have a surprise, or they, you know, or a delight, right? They remember those things, and that's what endears them to you, endears them to your organization. It's not surprising, right? And we all want to feel like we're individuals and that we're the special ones, right? So that's why I always, you know, we really don't have extra stuff, but like, let me see what I can do for you, right? Because people want to feel like, oh, you went out of their way, and you thought of them, you know. And sometimes I would leave like a notebook and say, oh, I haven't seen any around. I think we're really all out, but if I see any, and I left a little note and said, oh, I found one in the back of a breakout room, you know, with a little note with their name on it. And like, they remember, they're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you remember. And like, yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I remember working at one of the Zoomtopia events, and they were giving out like as swag, like those, as you mentioned, you know, like those beautiful backpacks with Zoomtopia, but they are really, really nice backpacks. Mm-hmm. And I knew that my husband would love one. So I was just asking, you know, registration, like, hey, do you guys have an extra they can spare? And you know, it was super cool. They're like, we have a mountain of them, like take as many as you want. So I end up like leaving with, I don't know, 4 or 5. All my friends have now Zoomtopia backpacks, the same, they're all the same.
Perfect. Yeah, and then you can take them on your vacation, you're all matching.
They're amazing. They're really, really awesome, right? So I was like, wow, like that was, you know, surprising. Like you said, like, keeping these fresh and memorable. Now I will remember that event forever because I'm obviously with a backpack, but also so are my friends.
Right, exactly. Like, remember that time I brought you that thing?
That's right. Like, how come you guys all have the same? Okay, don't worry about it. Speaking about keeping things fresh, let's talk about value next. As an event strategist, how do you make sure that you're always delivering value to your clients, aside from the things that were mentioned?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of data and anecdotes, right? I think that, you know, the data, you know, your surveys are going to be what translates the data on leads generated and the time to close those leads. Customer upsell, you know, if you're tracking that correctly in your CRM so that you know which ones are having those event touch points. And then I think some of it is also going to be anecdotal, right? So recently at an event at our user conference, I met one of our clients, and we were just at dinner chatting, and he mentioned that he found our company years ago at another one of our seminars. He was actually kind of trying to do what we were doing and wanted to see what we were doing. And he came to the event, and his business was not going well. And he was, you know, came to this event and learned so much and decided that we were kind of doing it better. And then he was going to buy our product, and it helped reshape the business that he was running. And that's not something that you're going to capture in a survey. That's not something that's going to be measured in your CRM, but having that story and understanding, okay, that customer, his business was changed because he came to an event, right? And that can be hard to translate, but keeping track of those stories. So are you hearing from people that, you know, it was because of an event that they closed, or that they pushed it to say, hey, we really got to get on board with this because, you know, I learned so much at this event, or this team is really supporting us as a partner. So sometimes it's going to be kind of keeping track of those stories. And I literally have like a little folder in my inbox on like when I see that, or I see a mention of it on Slack, I just take a screenshot of it. And then also using real data. So like, what is your data telling you from your organization on sales, on upsells, and how is that related to your event strategy?
I love that. And I love how, you know, back way back, you know, when you're talking about measuring event success, it used to be all about headcount. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was like your metric, right? Nowadays, we have so many tools. They're like unsupervised AI, and there's supervised AI, and there's tangible and intangible feedback and all the things. I was having a conversation on the podcast with Victoria Mattei, and she's all about, you know, the non-tangible type of feedback that you should be collecting at your events, which goes beyond that form that you send at the end, yeah. Right? It goes into like using your eyes and your senses to see how your audience perceives the event, like asking questions and getting that while it's fresh, right? And it's obviously times have changed since the headcount was just the only metric, and metrics do matter a lot, but so does the approach and the creativity that goes behind the approach. And I feel like this evolution really brings us to another vital aspect of event management and event planning, particularly in the corporate world where standing out is key. So considering this blend of art and science that is necessary in our field to deliver excellent events, I would love to dive into the unique world of marketing events. And that's mm-hmm. something that I know you're strong on, and you have quite a bit of experience and things to say about it, because they really, you know, it really sets the vibe, it sets the expectation, and marketing events has its own flavor. Mm-hmm. So how, in your experience, do marketing events carve out their niche and separate themselves from maybe other marketing strategies?
Sure. So I think that it depends on the type of event you're doing. So we run events that are sometimes specifically for customers. So to keep them engaged, to keep them loyal, to keep them using the product, to maximize their use of the product. And sometimes it's lead generation, right? So that's typically trade shows. Maybe it's an introductory where you're kind of telling more about the company and the story than you would at an event that is mostly customers and they already know kind of what your product does. And, you know, I think that it's about the human connection, right? Mm-hmm. So right now, digital marketing is so important. Email, mm-hmm. social, podcasts, you know, even direct marketing, magazines, all of that is really important. But there is nothing that replaces meeting in person. And we know that. We know that even with Zoom, there are great things that you can get done over Zoom. But there are also things that are easier in person, that the connection is built faster in person. You know, I have a family member who has traveled his entire career, like prior to COVID, was on a plane like 300 days a year. And, you know, when everything shut down and he was kind of coming and he was doing things virtually, you know, we said like, oh, is it really impacting you? And he said, it's not so much because I've been building those relationships for 30 years, right? Mm-hmm. It's harder to build those relationships from scratch over Zoom. He's like, I already have the relationship. This is just how we have to kind of work with it. I also think that especially in SaaS, so, you know, software as a service, a lot of those companies are, it's a lot of chatbots. It's a lot of, you know, remote support. You know, gone are the days on smaller deals where you're meeting in person, meeting your sales reps. Like a lot of it is happening through the computer. So your user conference or a trade show is that place to kind of humanize your business beyond that. And, you know, tech is, of course, plays a role, supports that, makes it easier, makes it faster, allows you to promote it, allows you to share it with more people. But at the end of the day, like we say B2B, but there's still, it's humans on the other side, right? And I remember how I deal with the people that work in an organization beyond the brand, right? Especially in events like where a brand can be so overarching, like, you know, an AV company or a hotel brand. But I remember property to property, what happens, or, you know, AV provider on a specific job. I remember how that interaction went. And so like, that's a little bit more tangible because it's, you know, events for events. But I think it's really that ability to have those conversations, you know, not having the Zoom lag, not having the getting outside of, okay, we only have 30 minutes. So what can we talk about in 30 minutes? And then we need to demo it. We need to talk about it. We need to get your use cases, right? Like let's have a drink or a cupcake or whatever it is. And, you know, learn about each other and what our motivations are that you're not going to get like when you're behind a screen, right? Like how much happens at an event that's not actually in the general session room, right? Like how much of it happens in the catering line or happens, you know, at registration, right? And I think now, especially as people are working remotely too, it's a great way to, you know, see those people kind of once a year, twice a year, and keep those relationships going that you might not have if, you know, like a lot of your team's not in an office. It's also great for your internal teams as well.
Totally. There's a saying that a business is actually closed at the bar, which is a bad news if you're not a drinker.
That's why I said cupcakes or something like, but, you know, getting outside, you know, in my organization, we service the landscape industry and we're very fortunate to be able to host some events like outdoors. Like, let's go look at this equipment outside. A few weeks ago, I posted photos of me with roasted marshmallows from one of our events. Like I was outside, like standing in a yard with roasted marshmallows, chatting with our customers and some prospects and complaining about how sticky marshmallows are no matter how much you try not to get it all over you, right? But that was a very like casual thing. You know, it could have alcohol, could not have alcohol. I know there's kind of a movement towards the not having alcohol at every event or keeping your options open in that way. But I think it's, you know, rethinking, okay, does it need to happen at the bar? No, maybe it happens around the campfire with your marshmallows.
I love that. I think it was a visual that Liz with H Club posted on LinkedIn as well about, hey, how about if we were hosting our meetings outside, you know, instead of in a four wall closed ballroom? And I think as, you know, piggybacking on some of the things that you said, in this world of AI and technology, you know, changing so fast. And I mean, there's AI avatars. I use an AI avatar just to introduce a podcast. I know people on LinkedIn that for the last year or two, their face has not been on any of the video material that is used for marketing. It was an AI avatar. So in this world, I feel like that in-person connection, that human touch that is possible, it would be so much more important. It's almost like I actually like to joke that when you see a post on LinkedIn these days that has maybe some grammatical error or some misspelling or mistypes, those are the good ones. Those are the ones that, you know, some human wrote.
Yeah, and it's true.
It wasn't ChatGPT.
Exactly. And like, you know, I know that AI is getting better and that it's constantly learning, but it's still not perfect, right? And we can feel it, like we could feel like something is off when it's done poorly or it hasn't been vetted. You know, I know people in the content business who they're like, it's great for prompts and getting started, but then you still need that human eye. And people, I think the more that we rely on technology, the more important events are going to become, because otherwise we're just going to feel like we're just constantly dealing with robots, right? So I think that people are going to say,
all this content that starts with furthermore and moreover.
Yeah. They're going to be like, is that how you really talk? And no.
Right. Exactly. <It's not. laughs> I love it. Well, before we continue on, we will take a short moment to just give a shout out to our sponsor. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back to explore some more with our guest today, Shenandoah Nicholson.
Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifan Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifan Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. To find out how Trifan Events can plan and produce your event become memorable, go to trifanevents.com.
Welcome back, friends. If you're just joining us, we have our featured guest today, Shenandoah Nicholson, Marketing Events Manager, Corporate Events, Event Marketing, also host of Beyond the BEO. So picking up where we left off, it's clear that making an event memorable is not only a key piece of the puzzle, but another critical piece that we sort of like touched on, especially for our listeners who are keen on the business side of events, is providing the event's worth in tangible terms. So with that in mind, how do you tackle the challenge of showing the ROI of an event? And this is, I feel like it's one of the most, not just the hardest, like sometimes misunderstood topics. What strategies or maybe methodologies do you lean on to make sure that you're not just creating that experience, but also delivering that tangible, measurable value?
Yeah, I think it goes, you know, back to the data and making sure that your data is really tight, that everyone is bought into the process on how are we collecting leads, how are those leads being measured, how are they, what happens to them once they go into your CRM. And I think it's also about one metric that I've been using a lot lately is the cost per person. Mm-hmm. So I find that that's really helpful when I'm, you know, presenting to executives who are obviously budget conscious, but also want to have a full room, right? And so I like using that number, which obviously changes if you have like, you know, 500 people versus 1,000 people, your cost per person is going to fluctuate. But it helps them kind of understand, okay, if we have another 50 people, what does that mean? Like, does that, what does that cost us per mm-hmm. person to have them in the room, right? And so similar to how you measure other forms of marketing, it's the same, right? Like, what is your cost per acquisition? How are you measuring that? You know, what metrics matter to you, right? I heard a quote yesterday, and it kind of ties back into what you said earlier of like, a room full of the wrong people is worse than an empty room. Because, right. you know, our like, let's focus in our, like, let's be strategic about who we're inviting, why we're inviting them, and what are we willing to do to get them there, right? Like, is this a very large deal that would be, you know, strategic deal within the organization, then, you know, you might be paying for flights. You might be willing to comp some hotel rooms, things like that, versus, you know, people where, okay, they're a smaller organization. Like, you might give them free tickets. You might, you know, kind of bring in a nicer piece of swag, but it's not the return that you're going to get by, you know, investing all that money. So I often look at cost per lead. So what did we spend to be at an event? If it's a trade show, and how many leads did we get? And then also, you know, what, how many of our deals have an event touch point? So like I said, that goes back to being really tight with your data and your data team and how that's being measured. So if someone comes to the user conference, does that increase the likelihood that they're going to sign up more users or pay for more training or, mm-hmm. you know, what is that? And there are stats on kind of what a good amount is. It's usually about a 20% touch point. So that means that of, you know, 100 customers, 20 of them should have some kind of event interaction. And so, and then knowing like, is that your agreed upon metric, right? Is that good for your company? And also what is the cost of your product and what is the lifetime value of a customer? Like, those are all important things to know. Is the lifetime value of a customer $50,000 or $1 million? And so that's going to change what you're willing to put in and invest in the getting the lead, getting it closed, you know, that relationship long term. So I think it needs to be measured similar to the way that we measure other forms of marketing. And some of it is intangible, right? You know, social, especially in B2B and especially in software sales, a person's not seeing one tweet and then going and spending $60,000, right? Like, that's just not how we work as humans. But like, how are we measuring the engagement that we get? And you know, do our event posts do better? Do we see more interaction from folks and following because of that? So I think it's, you know, looking at it with your whole marketing program and understanding that, you know, events are not cheap, right? Like, they are an investment, but if they're done correctly, they can accelerate your time to close. They can find you leads that you're not going to find. You know, they're going to like make those connections faster for you than like, you know, we see so much on social, like, and other forms of marketing, email, like my email inbox. I can keep track, right? And my LinkedIn inbox. So it's being clear on what are we measuring and why are we measuring it? And like, what is going to success look like for all of the stakeholders?
I love it. I think it was Julius Solaris that posted something recently on LinkedIn as well about, you know, how these days, you know, the events are really the catalyst for those one-on-one meetings with that qualified lead.
Yeah.
It's what you were saying. And I'm curious though, like, how do you find those qualified leads? Because it's hard to qualify, right? It's like, it's not an easy, just like 1 + 1 = 2 equation, yeah. Right? Have you found anything? Do you have any tips on how to do that well?
Yeah, I think that's working really closely with your sales team, right? Mm-hmm. And understanding kind of the sales process, like how are they qualifying and disqualifying leads? Is it something that they can do quickly on site, right? Like that's going to kind of depend on what your product is. Like some products are much more complex and have, you know, a lot more that needs to be vetted before you kind of move in. Or is it as simple as knowing this company is X number of people, they do this much revenue, like is that all automatically qualify them, right? And I kind of mentioned it earlier, like what's happening to those leads afterwards, right? So how are we moving through them quickly to make sure like the right people are being spoken to all like as quickly as possible and that we're disqualifying the other leads like as quickly as possible too. And I think it's having your sales team really trained in and understanding when they're, especially at a trade show, like, and they're getting like so many people inundating them at the booth yeah. and a lot of people just want the free whatever, you know, how do you kind of engage them beyond just like the business card drop in the bowl to win a prize, right? How are you kind of qualifying those leads on site so that you're able to move through? And look, it like anything, you know, like any form of marketing, again, you can put it out there. You're not like, not every person you talk to is going to be a qualified lead, right? And like, you have to know that as well. So I think, again, it goes back to like being really clear at the beginning, like who are we looking for and how are we looking for them? And then if you're inviting them to your own event, so maybe you've already, you know, you've either researched the company or maybe you've met them at a trade show a while ago or had some other kind of interaction, they attended a webinar, like being really strategic on, okay, we want to have 100 people at this event. Here's a list of 500 really well-qualified leads. And this is how the sales team or the account management team or whoever the marketing team is going to reach out to those people and kind of not just like throwing out an invite and being like, well, hopefully people sign up for this, right? Like being strategic in how you're inviting people. We get a lot of emails, we get a lot of stuff coming through our inboxes. So how are you connecting with those people personally? We know like when we were doing our user conference, an email from an account manager was like, I don't know what the exact stat was, but it was infinitely times more likely to be opened than just a generic like events at whatever, right? So, you know, engaging your whole team and really having them bought in on how you're going to help them find those leads. They're going to do the qualifying, but how do you kind of focus it in so that you're targeting the right people and you're kind of using those resources wisely?
Awesome. I love actually what you said and piggybacking a little bit on that, especially on the trade show side. I was having a conversation with Kaelin Welch of Fast Sensor, and he was explaining how they're taking the gas out of this whole process with some of the technology that they built for tracking qualified leads. And this is all within, you know, privacy and the context of like doing this ethically, because there's a lot of technologies out there that like, well, what does it mean? Like you're scanning me, you know, coming into this booth, or like what kind of data are you collecting on me, right? Because there's some, you know, boundaries on that. And he was explaining how they've been able to generate this map of like only the qualified leads that you'd want to take home versus like having to scan this, you know, whatever card or pass or whatever, and scan another and scan another, and then just hope that out of this multitude of scanners, a few of them will turn out to be hot leads, right?
Yeah.
And it's like the technology is there and mm-hmm. it's available. It's just knowing about it or taking advantage of it and then making use of it. It's like, and then you have this data set of analytics that you can dive into and figure out, okay, so where do we go from here? What do we want to pursue? So there's that urgency, the timing that you mentioned. You don't just leave it there. Like it's funny, sometimes I would attend those conferences and I still get emails like 3 months later.
Yeah.
From some kind of like a connection I made. And this is the first email I get too.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, yeah. I don't even remember, like, where did we meet, what, yeah. under what circumstance? Like, that you can't let that happen because
yeah.
things move so fast in our time mm-hmm. and age today.
Yeah, so, and that's what I mean about having that process really tight with your team of, like, okay, you know, you get home from the event, you know, the event ends on a Tuesday, you're home on Wednesday, how are you reaching out to those people? Like, you're not waiting a week. You maybe don't do it on the day of, might look a little desperate, you know, but keeping right. it like fresh. And I know, you know, I'll go to a trade show and same, like, you get emails like weeks and months later, or like unpersonalized ones, like, that are just like, hey, thanks for stopping by the booth. And it's like, okay, so you clearly don't remember who right. I am, or did what I even stop by your booth? Yeah. Like, I don't even know. Right. Yeah. Like, you know, it's again, bringing back that human element. Like, yeah, tech is great. Having a list from the trade show. I also really like appreciate when I get the trade show lists in advance. So then we can kind of reach out and say, hey, we saw, like, you know, are you going to be at X trade show this week? We'd love to have you stop by the booth, see a demo. We'd love to, you know, we have a little gift for you, or are you available for dinner? So kind of that pre-qualifying, right? Like, looking at the companies that are coming so that you're able to kind of be strategic on site about who you're trying to find, who you're reaching out to. You know, I've worked in places too that, like, you shouldn't even really be at the booth. Like, don't tell trade show people that, but, like, you should be making right. those meetings that are either happening at the booth or they're happening off the booth, right? Like, it's like, what are you doing around the event before yeah. and after, that you're not just letting this rich amount of data just sit? Because, like, there's nothing worse than, like, finding a list of leads that you're like, did anyone do anything with this? Like, no, oh no, we didn't know what we were supposed to do with it. Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, right. Totally. Well, it's time for another piece of trivia, because we started this topic with ROI. Did you know that the term ROI was first used in the 1910s? Even though it wasn't applied, you know, to events, it was applied to another context. Events, I feel like it's a whole new ball game.
Well, yeah, it makes sense that, like, I think that it feels like only recently have people been really honing in on the ROI, right? And mm-hmm. and also, you know, the break that we had from having to be or being able to host things in person allowed us to rethink, okay, we do this event every single year and we do it the same way every single year. Why? Like, is that helping us? Is that helpful? Like, are we getting a return? You know, it was this opportunity of, like, okay, we had to have this pause. And now that we are bringing things back in, and some companies are just now going back to in-person or going back to in-person mm-hmm. to the size that they were before. So in 2019, 2018, right? And so using that return to say, okay, well, what were the most impactful things, and what did people really like about the event? And, well, we always had this thing, but why, right? And so yeah. it's a lot of asking why are we doing this, what is the purpose, you know? And I think asking those questions all the time is really important.
It almost sounds like my 7-year-old child, you know, constantly asking that. And I'm like, this is so annoying right now. You know,
but like, not wrong. Like, she needs to know why.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, reflecting on something that you said earlier about, like, how we're going to top this for next year, it's obviously evident that, you know, the dynamic world of events, it's constantly pushing the envelope to innovate, to think ahead, to think differently. So this innovation, constant innovation, doesn't just redefine our strategies, right? But it also challenges us to think about the lasting effect of our events. So with that in mind, I want to pivot us into, what does it look like to extend an event's impact beyond the immediate experience, which is quite crucial. So given your experience, I'm curious to hear your perspective. What's your secret to ensuring that an event's influence resonates with, you know, well beyond the day itself? And how do you keep that momentum going and the conversation alive with your audience?
Yeah, I think that, again, comes back to the plan beforehand, right? So not waiting until after the event to say, oh, what are we doing with these leads? What are we doing with this content that we created? What are we doing with these videos? What are we doing with these pictures? Like, everything should already have a plan, and gone are the days of an event being just the 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever days you're on site, right? You know, you're using that content. You're like, it's, we're in an era of content, and events are so rich with it, especially if you have a great photographer, video capturing
production
all of it.
Agency,
like all of it, right? Like, yes. But it's true, right? And so, how are you connecting? Like, what is your plan afterwards? Like, okay, we have this shot list. All right. So does it just sit in a drive somewhere and you send out a link and you're like, hey, come look at yourself in these photos? No, like, how is that going to tie into your future events? Are you using events to get testimonials from customers that you can then use?
I love that thought. I was going to intersect that because who was it? David Stevens, he's a film marketing expert and he used to use that tactic all the time. Like if you wanted to get valid feedback after your event, he wouldn't release those photos until you submitted the feedback. Right. And the rate of response was increased by, I don't know, like he had a metric, I think it was like 80%.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants a good taken photo at an event that is way beyond your cell phone photo, right?
I went to a user conference where they gave me a $5 Starbucks gift card, and I guarantee you I completed that survey to get my $5 Starbucks gift card. I was not leaving without my $5. Like, I was so jazzed to have my free coffee, right?
That's
and so
right.
Look at, like, is that a good use of your resources, right? Like, is a $5, like, little something on site going to entice people? And I think it's also, you mentioned surveys. I'm like, I know we're running out of time. We do not have time to get into the complexities of surveys. But what are you doing with your surveys? Like, I also ask, why are we asking these questions? Like, what is it about this question that we're going to either do something with? I had a VP years ago. We used to host these internal town halls and some of the VPs would do a survey and they wanted lots of questions and wanted lots of detail from their attendees. And we had another VP who was like, I'm not doing a survey. She's like, I'm not changing the content. I don't care if they like the food. I'm not doing a survey. And I was like, that is very smart. Like, if you're not going to change anything about your event based on the feedback, don't ask then. Like, don't waste everybody's time.
You don't need it. Exactly.
Yeah. And what else are you doing within your survey? Are you asking for testimonials within your survey? Are you asking what else they want to see at future events? So does that maybe become a session next year, or does it become a webinar or a podcast or whatever? Like, use what you're hearing on site and use what you're getting in your feedback to say, like, okay, like, let's incorporate this. We had a lot of people ask about this feature. Okay, let's show them how to use it, or like, let's create a series or a training module around it, right? This is an event, especially like a user conference, when you're in a room full of your customers, there's just so much information that you need to, and it's like almost overwhelming, but there's so much there that you want to get that is invaluable to your product team, to your account management team, your sales team. Like, what is it that they're struggling with? And like, you know, the marketing team, what do people care about? Like, do they want another blog on the same thing we did a blog on last time? Or, hey, they keep asking about this thing. Like, can we incorporate that in the marketing, right? So, you know, using it, yes, connecting your event itself and kind of keeping that breadcrumb going of like, you know, keeping them engaged till next year, but also then saying, okay, you asked, we answered. Like, here's all the stuff like that you want to
know, like, do something with it. Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Well, here's another last piece of trivia nugget, which again, I didn't know about, but apparently, did you know that the longest running corporate event is the Leipzig Trade Fair in Germany that apparently started in the Middle Ages? I'm sure I totally mispronounced the name, but it's like,
I still love it. I still love it. It's like, you know what, we've been, but it's funny because it's like, we've been gathering for thousands of years and like, we're going to keep gathering for thousands of years, right? Like, technology has changed, but we still keep getting together in person, right? And so it's like, yeah, we've been doing it since the Middle Ages. We've been doing it since before then, right?
Exactly. Like, this is not new.
Ancient civilizations got together and did things together, right? So it's...
And I'm sure somebody planned those events, even though they're not probably called event planners.
Someone had to make that food and let the village know.
Right. It's like, oh, think about, okay, here's where we're going to all meet together. This is the location. We all come at, I don't know, when the sun comes down or whatever, exactly. Like they were measuring time by, right?
Yeah.
I
love it.
Well, this was a fantastic conversation. As we come to time and we're wrapping up, Shenandoah, I am super excited that we got a chance to dive into this. There's obviously a lot to be said more, but your expertise, experience really truly underscores the importance of what we talked about, you know, that personal touch and transforming events, the innovation, the strategy, the metrics, marketing, all the things. Now, before we close, where can our audience keep up with you and what you're doing, the podcast, anything that maybe even trivia, anything you'd like to share?
For sure. So yeah, thanks so much for having me on the show. Like you mentioned, I have a podcast, Beyond the BEO, talking about mostly corporate events, marketing them, AV, you know, strategy, and also your career as an event professional. Like, I'm really passionate about amplifying event professionals, having us seen as professionals, which is something we can sometimes struggle with depending on the organization. So you can find me on Instagram at Beyond the BEO, also on LinkedIn, Shenandoah Nicholson. There's only one of me, so pretty easy to find. I'm always happy to connect there, and I'm pretty active over there. And in terms of trivia, if you are in the Toronto area, I'm always happy to play trivia. Or if you know I'm coming to a city near you, I'm always happy to play trivia. I don't play so much online anymore that the pubs have reopened, but always happy to participate. Also, there's a few trivia podcasts that you might hear me on.
I love it. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with our audience and the fun things that we just had quite a bit of a conversation about. And I'm sure that our audience will be eager to follow up and definitely tune into Beyond the BEO. There's a lot of information there as well. Massive thank you to you, Shenandoah. Thank you for joining today, dropping some serious knowledge. In closing, thank you so much for everyone that's tuning in, as well as our main sponsor for today's podcast. Check out our upcoming AI workshops and boot camps at 3Find Events. These sessions are really designed to equip you with the latest tools and strategies in AI technology for not just growing your business, but also your events. For more information and where to register, how to register, please visit the website. While there, do check out the AV Production GPT, which has been trained on an extensive data set of AV, AI, budgeting information, planning, and all the good stuff, which helps you get that expert advice and the solution that you might need in order to optimize your event performance and the impact, while ensuring also that the budget, efficiency, and the attending engagement is there. Lastly, don't forget to follow us on all of our channels for updates on the future episodes, industry insights, and much, much more. We're here to really keep you ahead of the curve in the event-changing world of events. Thank you for tuning in. I am your host, Anca Platon-Chufan. Until next time, stay curious and empowered, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Events Demystified podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to review it, rate it, and share it with other event professionals that could benefit from it. Connect with us on social at Events Demystified Podcast. We would love to hear from you and what you're up to. If you'd like to learn more about 3Find Event services and find out if we're a good fit in supporting your event, can we help your event be successful with a 20-minute free consultation? Link in the episode's notes. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks so much for tuning into this exciting conversation. Make sure you follow and subscribe to Events Demystified Podcast to stay in the know about all of our upcoming episodes featuring some amazing guests.